Welcome to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. We talk race reviews, news from the paddock, and bring you everything from the world of Formula One. And now your hosts, Drew, Walker, Ed, and Tomas.
Welcome back to Parc Fermé, episode 3, season 2. I am here with the boys from the Across the Pond, Greater Toronto Area, Toronto GTA, with Mr. Edward, Mr. Walker, Mr. Drew, and myself, Thomas, in the bunker from Lithuania. How are you, boys?
I'm amazing. Thank you for asking. How are you?
How are you doing? Amazing. Yeah. So without I'm good. Thank you for asking. Without further ado, I wanted to get that out of the way, and I'm gonna pass on the torch to Walker as per usual. And let's get going.
All right. Well, Thomas, thank you very much for that dynamic introduction. You know, for those of you, obviously you wouldn't have heard this because this was pre-record. Thomas came in here really hot, and he was like, "Guys, I want to do the intro today. I'm ready. I've been practicing. I got something really good," and I'm really glad that we gave you the space to share that, because that was better than I could have ever imagined. That was absolutely perfect. I think, well, yeah, you know what? If you're here, you're here. And hopefully you're still here, because that was a bit of a rocky start. But we do have some interesting conversation today, because we are going into preseason testing in, what, 2 days now? It is Tuesday. Right. Starts, is it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Whatever. Preseason testing is coming up. I know we're all really excited to see that and see some of the cars on the track, get some real data, you know, beyond pontificating about all of the different changes in the aerodynamics and talking about the liveries. It's going to be nice to see cars back on track. But in the meantime, we thought we would take this episode to just provide a little bit. It's going to be more of an opinion episode. We're just going to go through some really top line topics, share our thoughts. You know, we talked about some bold predictions last episode. I think we're going to add a few more in there today. And I think one of the questions that we're really looking forward to being answered later this season is really how that mid pack shapes up, because I think we can agree, we kind of know who's going to be up the front. We have Red Bull, Merck, Ferrari, and McLaren, I would say, are going to be kind of like the top four, maybe. But there's a lot, there's a big fucking middle back of the pack, which to me, I don't know if there's a lot of clarity yet. So I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on where we kind of see, you know, 5 through 10 shaping up. Drew, you want to start us off and let us know what you think?
Sure. Thomas, thank you for a fantastic introduction. I expect nothing less from you. It was spot on. Moving on to Walker's subject, which I agree with. I think, you know, the top four, I think, are very clear to us. I think, you know, Aston Martin is probably fighting for that fifth spot right now. But I think realistically that the Visa Cash App RB team, which we can get into a whole bit later on what we think about the sponsorship dynamic and the names. But I think that, you know, if that team is going to be using the RB19 car, they're already the top of the mid pack, no matter what happened in the offseason. Like, I think that could be very well the fifth place team already, and they haven't even driven the car yet. Like, I think that, you know, that car is far and above, you know, a lot of off-season developments from some of the other mid-pack teams. Like, you know, not much has been said about what Haas has going on. I haven't heard any, you know, wild updates about what, you know, Williams is doing. The Stake team has an absolutely crazy livery, but in terms of like actual development on a car, I don't think anything's come out that, you know, jumps out at me, or at least any of the other news topics or news stations that, you know, it's got anything crazy going for it. Alpine has been, you know, absolutely ghost as far as I'm concerned. And I personally think that that Aston Martin and the Visa Cash App team are gonna, you know, be duking it out for that fifth place, I think, early on. I heard a couple of people talking about, you know, a quote that Charles Leclerc said at the beginning of last year, that, you know, a lot of the drivers know right away and a lot of the teams know right away after preseason testing, kind of where that pecking order is going to look like. So I'm very interested to see at the end of this weekend what those drivers have to say about their car, because I know a lot of the teams end up sandbagging a little bit in terms of like what their actual productive value is going to be. And, you know, a lot of other teams, you know, push out these hero laps where they put almost no fuel in the car just to get some wild lap times to appease the sponsors. So I'm interested to see what the drivers' reactions are to the cars and kind of seeing like where that gelling is. I also found it very interesting too. There was a couple of the news stations that I listened to regarding F1 news, and they were talking about how preseason testing has become like a really big thing. Like it went from being like, you know, something that was like a sideline, you know, we slightly talked about it if there was anything crazy new that a team was doing differently. But now they have, you know, 40,000-50,000 people like in attendance for these, you know, preseason testing. I thought that was super interesting. I had no idea that the interest in preseason testing has become that radical. But yeah, I guess to kind of summarize that, I think the RB Cash App team is going to have an absolutely smacker of a car, even if they use last year's Red Bull.
So question follow up to that. Is that kind of like a fact that they are using like the last year's RB19? Like
from when you I've say heard, that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. From what I've heard.
Kinda,
yeah. They just said like, here, we don't want you to beat us, but we want you to be really competitive because you're like our little sister team. So we're just going to hand you like a really wicked last year's car. And that means their car, from what I'm taking from it, their car is so good that they're not even worried about last year's car being competition. So that's how confident Red Bull is from my side, or like at least from what I've read that they're doing with their car. What do you got on that, Ed?
It's exactly the same, because I think towards the end of last year, they were saying that Red Bull and Visa Cash App or AlphaTauri, they were going to really start planning to share, technologies, share aero, share pretty much like how cars are being set up and how they're being developed. So I really, at this point, like, I'm not even thinking of Visa Cash App. Again, maybe too soon, but if they are in fact using RB19 plus development, they might even overtake Aston Martin. They might even go beyond the mid pack and start to play with the, you know, the heavy hitters up top. So, I mean, that might be pushing it. We'll never know what the capabilities are for both Tsunoda and our boy Danny Rick, but we'll see. But if they are using it, I don't think it's just mid-pack at this point. They're going to start infringing in the, you know, the big guns up top. So,
but we'll, you brought up a good point, though. Do you think that Danny Rick and Yuki Tsunoda are the two guys to grab a car like that and do something with it?
They could. Tsunoda's pretty fast when he wants to be, and when he's not, you know, screaming profanities to his race engineer. And Danny Rick, last season, just like what we've been talking about, he was really looking for a chance to prove himself. And he tried and he tried and he tried. But then again, broken hand, he may have come back great, but I don't think he was 100% even towards the end of the season. So he's got an axe to grind to try to, you know, really show up and with a even better car. We all know what Danny Rick is capable of. If he on a good day, but we don't know where he is right now.
Tomas, what do you think? Yeah, I wanna chime in a little bit, just kinda pull away to the side a little bit, just kind of interested to know your guys' opinion. Is this something you guys going to watch, like the preseason testing, or are you just going to kind of follow? Like, are you actually going to be following and watching it live as it goes on, or kind of just reading up on it?
I will be watching as much as F1 TV will allow me to watch. Like, I didn't know.
Me personally, I don't find that not the word interesting. I don't know. I find the whole races and sprints more interesting. But anyways, just wanted to know your opinion in regards to what Drew and Edward said. I agree with you guys. I think Red Bull and racing Visa, Cash App, Bulls. They're going to have a strong car, and it's going to be interesting to see. I hope they will be able to fight for that mid-pack or go, you know, a little bit above Aston Martin. Time will tell. Not much else to add besides that.
So I want to take a second and revisit this hand-me-down concept, because by that logic, AlphaTauri last year should have been absolutely crushing it as well, because, you know, the RB18 was still a pretty dominant car, right? So there's got to be, I mean, I don't think they're taking the exact same chassis, same car, and handing it over. So I'm just curious to see kind of what pieces to take for it, what inspiration, and, you know, I think what we learned over the last couple of years with, you know, Mercedes, for example, is it's not just about like bolting on a couple extra pieces, you know, let's take these side pods, let's not take these side pods, whatever it might be, right? It's a complete package. It's how it's suited for the actual driver. So I don't know if I have as much faith in RB, Visa, Cash App, maybe as much as you guys do. Looking at the rest of the field,
more of a hand-me-down this time, though. Like, I think there was like a new synergy that happened, and they like actually are like, hey, we need our sister team to be more competitive. I think this whole like Visa Cash App kind of like money insurgents, kind of like, you know, they're like, listen, we don't want to pay $120 million for this jerk off team. We want it to be a competitive team. And I think from my understanding, Red Bull wants their sister team, which is like their development young driver kind of team. I think they want it to be more competitive so that they can start farming some of these young cats for the future. Because like, obviously Checo is going to be a whatever soon. So like, I think that is more of like, because you're right. Like, should they have in theory had a much better thing had this been like an exact replica before? Yeah, I think so. But I don't think that the handoff of parts and like, you know, frames and setups and all that kind of stuff was as one-to-one as it is now. Cause like I've heard on a few podcasts that like it's the RB19.
Okay. So I want to take this conversation and I want to get a quick rank of, assuming we know the top four, assuming we agree on the top four, let's say for all intents and purposes, let's rank 5 through 10. Drew, you want to start us off?
Okay. I'm going to go, just because I think the drivers are, I think Aston Martin's going to go 5. I think 6 is going to go RB Cash App. 7 will go to Alpine. 8 will go to Williams. I think the steak team's still going to be suffering. And then Haas is in last. What do you got, Ed?
I'm a little torn between Haas and steak being at the bottom. But like, you're, in terms of like how you set it up, it's almost the same. I'm probably going to say steak will be at the bottom, and then who knows what happens with the new head honcho over at Haas. We'll see what happens.
I'm gonna say Haas is still gonna be bottom. I really don't want steak to be 9th, but I'm pretty sure they are gonna be 9th. Aston Martin, I'm going to be mixing, matching. Aston Martin is going to be 5th, and basically, same as Drew said, his order, essentially.
So it seems like there's a bit of consensus. I think, you know, I'd love to see Stake and maybe Alpine do a bit of a push, but, you know, I think Alpine is just a bit of a fucking clusterfuck right now, given... Like, it just seems like they're in a void. Like, there's no direction. They're just like, I don't really know. They're like floating in space, like just waiting to be like sucked up by a black hole. I don't really know. And I feel bad for drivers like Gasly. Like, I really like Gasly as a driver. And I think, you know, I wish he was in a better situation, but maybe they'll show me, maybe they'll prove us all wrong. They'll fucking pull a rabbit out of their hat and they will be more competitive, but I'm not sure. Speaking of drivers and Gasly, I wanted to switch topics to some opinions, predictions on drivers. And I want to look at this two ways. we talked about before the episode, we're going to talk about, you know, who's your dark horse? Who do you think is really going to come out and show, you know, put on a good show and be impressive? And that's one element. But I want to kind of look at it. Who is going to be the most disappointing driver in a top team? And who is going to be the most impressive driver on a bottom five team? So we'll take that split. We'll take the top four and we'll take the bottom five and or bottom six. And I want to know who in that top four is going to be most disappointing to you and who in that bottom six is going to be most impressive.
Okay. I like
it. Do we get that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, I got you. I got you.
Okay. Okay.
I'm going to go top four most impressive. I'm going to take a dark horse on this one a little bit. And I think I want to go Oscar Piastri. Like he was super impressive last year. And I think, I don't know if he's going to be the best driver, but I think he's going to like really hone in on his skills this year. And if McLaren delivers any sort of car that gives him an opportunity to show how he drives like the last third of last year, I think it's going to be unreal. On the flip side of that, who do I think is going to be, the most poor performing driver of the top four teams? I'm going to go with George Russell. I think the whole Lewis leaving thing is actually going to flip him out a little bit because, like, he knows that he has to really show up. Lewis is going to, you know, just like I said last week, Lewis is going to do the glow up. He's going to drive the wheels off that car no matter what it looks like this year. And he's going to be like, this is what you're going to miss, boys. And he's just going to take off with this, like, winning record. And he's going to put George to shame. And I think that, you know, George is just going to get all up in his head being like, I have to lead this team next year all by myself. And I think he's just going to absolutely implode. I hope Checo this year. I was going to just pick Checo because he was an easy target. But I think Checo is actually going to, like, you know, it's similar to Lewis Hamilton. I think, you know, in theory, this could be his last year there. And I think he's going to absolutely do a really good job. I think he's going to, you know, dust off the shoulders from last year and show up in a big way. So, yeah, I guess to summarize that, I got Oscar Piastri as my best and most surprising driver in the top four. And worst performing this year, I think, is going to be George Russell. Sorry, George.
Top performing. I would say that's tough. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Lando Norris. Last year, his performance was okay, but a little bit underwhelming with what is expected of him. And also Oscar Piastri winning a sprint race over him. Maybe he's going to want to try to, like, improve himself and show that he is the number one seat in McLaren. Most disappointing top four, I would say Leclerc. Being that he's now on a crossroads again of should he perform so much so that he would be still seat number one for Ferrari in 2025 with Lewis coming in? Or will he be like, just like when he was running with Vettel, I'll just do my thing and try to figure things out during the entire season. So, yeah. So that's who I have. Tomas?
My most surprising, or the one that's going to shine the most, I think, is going to be Charles Leclerc. I think he had so much shitty luck and bad luck. I think he's going to drive the living piss out of that Ferrari and gonna show us all what he can really do. And I hope his luck turns around. And in regards to the least surprising or least disappointment, I think I'm going to go with this. Just thinking logically through what you guys said, I can't picture anyone else but George Russell in this scenario. To Drew's point, who knows? You know, maybe he is going to feel lost, I guess it would be the word. But at the end of the day, he might surprise us as well and push through it. But I see him as a weaker person out of the top four teams. So, yeah, I'm going to say George Russell will be disappointment.
So coming into this question, I had completely different answers than what I have right now because of the commentary that you've all provided. You know, I think most, you know, disappointing, I think, you know, to your point, Drew, I think Checo is an easy target because he kind of shit the bed last year. He's got lots of pressure on him. He's not performing, best car out there, et cetera, et cetera. But then, Ed, you said Lando, except I'm going on the flip side. I feel like of the top four teams, of the eight drivers, he's the only one that doesn't have a win of any kind. No sprint, no Grand Prix win. He's got a rookie that, you know, was his equal for the most part of the year. You know, I forget who won like the head-to-head, but like they were fairly equal. I feel like that's going to start getting in his head. And I think he's like pretty laid back. He's pretty chill. He doesn't seem, at least from, you know, a media perspective, like, you know, like a killer competitor, like a Max or a Lewis. I'm sure obviously you're competitive to get to that level and you have to be, but I would just, it would be interesting to see how he handles the pressure of being in that position, being in a top car, not winning, and having a teammate who is coming for that number one seat. If not, you know, potentially maybe already there, I'm not sure. So I want Lando to do well, but that would be the one that I would look out for. Most impressive of those, again, a bit of a toss-up, but I'm just going to go with a less obvious answer. I'm going to go with Carlos. I think he's going to have a lot to prove this year. Obviously, he's still without a seat. He's without a team for next year. So, you know, he's got to put on his best show, kind of like Checo did, you know, in those last Force India days, right, when he was, you know, really driving for his life, driving to survive, if you will. You know, that's really the theme of Carlos's year, because I think he's more than qualified to be there, right? It's just about finding a seat. And, you know, he wants to stay with a competitive car. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that pressure, but I think he'll do really well. Do we want to address the bottom six teams really quickly? Impressive, disappointing. Drew?
Impressive, disappointing.
You know what? Who's going to...
I can circle back. I think, you know, Alpine is one of those teams that has, you know, in the last 5 years have just been so lost. Like ever since the switchover, I just think that they have two fantastic drivers. Like I think Ocon and Gasly are two of the most underrated drivers, and they've always been given these like bullshit cars. But as soon as the opportunity presents itself, like these guys actually show up. And like, you know, I think Alex Albon in the Williams last year is a perfect example of that, where you have like an outstanding driver in a car that's whatever, but given the right circumstances, like he's able to kind of pull off like what we would call a miracle in a big way. I don't know how Logan Sargeant got another contract. Blows my mind. Absolutely baffles me. I think, you know, Nico Hülkenberg and what's the other guy's name?
Magnussen.
Yeah, K-Mag. Fucking hell.
K-Mag.
I can always just imagine Danny Rick saying, Nico Hülkenberg. That's all I can hear in my head. And K-Mag. wow. Well, yeah, I just think those guys they're in the end of their career. I think they're both fantastic drivers though. Like, I think they're both really good drivers. And like, I would just, you know, don't you guys ever just want to see all of these guys get into the same car and actually see who's a better driver? Cause we never know. You have no idea. Cause the cars are so wildly different. Like, I would love to see how K-Mag does one-on-one with like Lewis Hamilton in the identical car, you know, cause like even when you have an AB car, like, you know, all the constructors always say like, oh yeah, they're the exact same car between George and Lewis. They're fucking not. They're not. Let's call it what it is. A spade's a spade. You know, it's like Checo and Max. Do they have the same car? Hard no. It's going to be a hard no for me. And do I think that they need to be the same car? I don't because each driver has a different skill set and like a different style of driving and like, you know, where they want their rear more responsive, whatever the case is. But I think, you know, I would just love to see one race where everyone's apples to apples. I know we discussed that last year and I still dream about it. Back on topic, got a little tangent, sideways, little left turn. I think it's underwhelming what Alpine's been given to Gasly and Ocon and what they're doing. I think you have two very meh drivers. Sorry, Thomas, but Bottas has been absolute shit since he left Mercedes, and Joe Grandi has been nothing but mediocre on his absolute best day, to the point where Edward remembers highlights of FP2 is his best driving. So like,
I think it was FP1 actually, but
It
wasn't even FP2.
Wasn't even FP2. So yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot of meh going on in the bottom half of that. And I would just love to see, you know, because then you have Alex Albon, who's not a meh driver. And I think he's a fantastic driver. And I think he would be a great second seat back at Rebel again, to be honest. I think that'd be fantastic to see. But whatever. That's my two cents. What do you got, Ed?
Man, you hit the nail on the head, man, in terms of like those drivers. I think I would lump a bunch of drivers, but if we were to choose just one, it would be in one team. Disappointing, and will continuously be a disappointment, would be Logan Sargeant. And then who I'm actually rooting for specifically for this year, the bottom set of teams, is Alex Albon. Because I have a feeling this year would be just like, I think it's a theme now. It's a swan song for every single driver on the grid that doesn't have a contract extending towards this year. But specifically to Alex Albon, like, he could get a chance and make his way to Red Bull in 2025. Or who knows, maybe either Danny Ric or Tsunoda is going to go up into Red Bull, or someone else is going to be taken into Red Bull. But I have a feeling that Alex Albon, just because of what he showed last year, and you know, the team in itself with Williams, like, they were pretty secretive in terms of like the development of their car, even like the showing of the car in itself, like, they didn't really have enough press on it. So who knows? We'll see. But yeah, those are my two drivers, like, on the same team. The others, nothing really changes. I don't think anything's going to change for Haas. I don't think anything's going to change with Alpine. Stay, come on. FP1, Zhou Guanyu. That's it. Like, are we going to talk about Aston Martin? I'm going to unleash my hatred for Stroll? Get out of F1 if you're listening.
Are you still answering the same question? Just curious.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Are we?
Tangent. Okay. I love the tangent.
Tangent.
I mean, Drew had a tangent. I can have a tangent.
Everyone can have a tangent. Everyone's allowed one.
Okay, that was it.
And you're cut.
I'm done.
And you're cut. Thomas.
So I agree with that in regards to, I wish I could clump up a bunch of the bottom drivers together.
Just pick one.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I got my one for each. And the one that I think is going to surprise us the most, I honestly think, is going to be Logan Sargeant. I'm with you, Drew. I don't know how the heck he got another year extension. Apparently they saw something in him, whatever that was, crashing their cars maybe. So I think he's under pressure too, and he's gonna drive them even harder and hopefully not crash them. That's my thought. Who's gonna disappoint the most? I'm gonna say with my favorite, Valtteri Bottas. I think he wasn't already great to begin with, but I think he's even gonna be more shit, and this hurts me to even say that. I don't know, it's just a feeling. So those are my top two.
You know, I disagree.
Logan Sargeant's gonna win.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. I will tell you why. I agree with you, Thomas.
Okay, I want to hear this.
It's all relative to the expectations, right? And I think the expectations are so incredibly low on Logan that anything beyond, you know, anything other than just smashing it in the wall 10 out of 23 races or whatever is going to be a success, right? Maybe a couple of points here and there. I'm with you on that one. On that same note, I think my dark horse for the year is going to be, Ed, you need to take another puff, my friend. It's going to be Lance Stroll. And Ed, for those of you that are listening on the podcast, is losing it right now. And I think the most disappointing in that kind of bottom six is going to be Alonso. I think he came in, he had a good year last year. he came in, he had a good, strong car. Everyone was like, oh yeah, Alonso, he's like the ageless wonder. Like, he's killing it. Blah, 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 blah. Where was he? He's like, I'm going to be on every podium. Great. Where was he at the end of the year? He was nowhere. And he was becoming bitter and bitchy and not having fun. And I think, again, based on expectations to potential reality, I think Lance has tremendous upside. All your
that opportunity, that's for sure.
All your faces are just hilarious.
I'm not sure if you're like, if you specifically try to like just go against the grain. Like, you like, you know how we're gonna react, and you say it so like convincingly. You are absolutely confident. I love it though. I love it.
Anyways, there we go. Alonso, I think, is the most disappointing based on where our expectations are of him and where he kind of like performed last year. I don't think he's going to have it in him. I think if he gets off to a poor start, if he gets off to a shitty start, it's just going to fucking tank his entire season. Like, the ego, like the bravado that he brings to it is just going to go south, and he's going to fight with Baby Stroll, and Baby Stroll is going to win that fight every time. Speaking of drivers, Drew, you brought this up. You actually touched on this man earlier. You talked about George Russell, Mercedes, and the pressure he's going to be feeling becoming the number one, maybe, driver going into 2025. I know we touched on this a little bit before in a previous episode a couple of weeks ago, but now that some of the dust has settled, you know, there are a bunch of rumors swirling around. Who do we see coming to Merck next year? Who are they signing? Who wants to lead us off? Thomas, you want to take that one?
Who do I see Merck signing? That was the question, right?
Yep. Yep. Next year, 2025, who's replacing Lewis?
I'm really, really hoping and leaning towards Alonso. I like him as a driver. I think he brings a lot of experience to the grid. I think he hasn't been given the right car to fully show what he's still capable, what he still has in him. And I hope Merck sees that and gives him the chance to prove himself. Now, you know, looking back, I think Merck is also a little bit more keen to, I guess, would be investing in younger talent as well. I mean, Lewis has been with them for a lot of years, and now since he's moved on, maybe they don't want another experienced driver. Maybe they're looking for more new talent to see what they're capable of. But my guy would be Alonso, and I think Merck would be stupid not to take him. Drew?
I have so many questions for that. Like, what do you consider an experienced driver? Like, based on those same principles, like, I would love to see Alex Albon in that seat. I think he fits the Mercedes mold in terms of, like, character. He's composed. He doesn't talk shit about anything. He doesn't complain about the car after the fact. I think he is out of the spotlight to the point where, like, he doesn't cause any, like, ruffles. I think Mercedes is very particular about who they pick for their drivers. I would love to see Fernando Alonso there. Like, I'm with you on that. Like, that was my original, like, gut reaction was, like, oh, they're going to pick up Fernando because it's a non-committal commitment, right? They're picking up Fernando knowing that it's going to be a short-term deal because he's, you know, at the end of his career. But I think that what he brings, like, what his baggage is something that Mercedes isn't willing to subscribe to. And I think there's other drivers on the grid that they're going to fight for, like an Esteban Ocon or somebody like that, who like has an opportunity to sit in a big car, who doesn't have as many miles on him as Fernando does, but I think can be molded into more of a future. Or do they just go, you know, brand new, pull somebody out of F2 and just run with that? Or do they stick to somebody who's in F1, make it more of a shorter term solution? Because it's the same thing. If they bet big on George Russell being the future of Mercedes, then like having someone like Alex Albon might not be a good idea because he could absolutely embarrass George in terms of driving. And then now what do you have, you know, like, are they going to pivot and then just put everything behind, and but behind somebody like Alex Albon, like I don't know. I think there's so many options that it's kind of narrowed down to no options. Like until things play out at the end of this year, I think a lot of drivers are going to drive this year for that seat. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Mercedes does, because, you know, making a decision now, I think, is wildly stupid. I think they're just going to wait till the end of the year. And I would argue the off season, unless somebody comes up early or an opportunity comes up early that they can't say no to. Yeah. So that's kind of my no answer answer.
It was definitely a no answer answer. Ed?
The F2 driver, Antonelli, I think it might be too soon for him to, actually come up as a quick replacement for, Lewis Hamilton. What do you call this? Alonso is like the easiest pick with, Albon. I doubt that James Vowles is going to allow that to happen.
Why is that?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think James Vowles has the cojones to stand up to Toto?
Well, he's like a little Toto protege. Like runs deep there. So why do you think that? And,
he,
you know,
posted on social media that, Albon's not going anywhere.
Yeah, so, but so did Lewis that he doesn't want to go anywhere and stick with Merck. So we both know that they can post whatever. And the truth is different at the end of the day. So that does not mean
See. I know, but we'll see. But that's not my point. What I'm trying to get at is, if we're talking about older drivers, like the seasoned drivers, I was even thinking, why not Vettel? Imagine Vettel coming back in a Merc that actually performs.
So question happen, and I tell you why. It's quick. Why? Sorry, Walker. No, please. It's because from what he did, not last year, but previous years, he wore a different outfit, standing up for things that are important to him or causes that are important for him. And he got reprimanded quite a few times. And we all know how Merck works. They're a little bit of more conservative. They don't want, that much attention. And Vettel is like an activist to a point, and I think that's too much of a liability for them, and they're not gonna go with him. Those are my two cents.
Do you know
who he's replacing? Can we also talk about he's retired? Like, he doesn't work in F1 anymore? Like, why don't you bring back Schumacher Senior? Like, fuck it up. Like, we're just gonna pick drivers? Like,
no, bring back Ralph. Bring back Ralph.
Yeah.
He can still move. He can still drive.
Yeah.
I don't, hold on. I don't really know where to start here. Hold on. So first of all, Thomas, to your point, Thomas, Lewis was the biggest activist on the grid and has been for years. He wears all the t-shirts. He does all the things. And I think to a certain extent, Mercedes has gotten behind him, you know, quite emphatically in supporting him and supporting these causes and changing the livery to all black and, you know, all those things. So I don't know if that is necessarily... I think the fact that he's retired is probably like a bigger hindrance than the fact that he wore like a Save the Bees t-shirt. I think the other question was for Ed, and I guess everybody here, is why are we, you know, all of our answers seem to be fixated on a more senior short-term plug.
Yeah.
Why do we think that is? Like, why are we leaning that way? Is it just because Alonso's available and he's kind of like the fun choice? You know, versus going someone like an Antonelli, who I read is like apparently the youngest driver in history to have like a super license based on like the number of points required or something to that effect, or an Albon or an Ocon or something like that. But again, this conversation really seems to be, you know, who is that short-term plug? I guess that's my first question, and we can kind of loop this all into one answer. And then Drew, the other part that you kind of touched on was, you know, bringing in someone who's not going to ruffle George's feathers because he's the incumbent number one. And I guess my question to that is he the incumbent number one? You know, is Mercedes approaching this being like, you are now the guy, right? Or, you know, if they bring in someone like an Albon or somebody like that, like, is it like open season on who is like their top driver even though there may not be officially, you know, a top driver?
You know what? That's a great point. And I think, you know, it'll ultimately depend on what, you know, to Edward's point too, like the Antonelli thing, if they want to go long-term play, scoop them up now. You know what I mean? You might have to take a hit of him like learning how to drive an F1. You might get an absolute rock star like a Lewis Hamilton or a Max Verstappen who comes out of the gate just absolutely banging it. But chances are you won't. It'll be like an Oscar Piastri, which takes a little bit of time, you know, shows up really well, but like he's not automatically like championship winning. And that's the thing. Whereas Mercedes, like they're in the top three, four cars, depending on what obviously this year's season, the preseason testing looks like. But let's get real. Like it depends on what Mercedes chooses to do. If they end up going just like, you know, someone like an Antonelli, like go long-term, take the hit now, I think that's a great play. I do actually think that's a great play. You know, to another one of your points, or I guess one of your questions, like if they put in someone like Alex Albon, I think he's a great example of like somebody who is at George's level. Like that would be like a, hey, you know what? You two figure out who's going to be the number one driver. Show us who's the best. Show us why we should have you as the number one, because Antonelli's on deck for whoever doesn't show up. That would be amazing. Because to watch Albon and George Russell go at it, because Hamilton and George, they went at it a little bit, but that's like, that's a David Goliath thing, right? Like to see like a Goliath and Goliath kind of go at it, I think would be way more entertaining. Does Mercedes want that kind of thing happening? I don't think they can afford it in the championship because they don't want that stuff happening, right? So like, do they want to have somebody who's at, you know, like, because if an Esteban Ocon or a Pierre Gasly comes in, I don't think that George Russell is going to beat him. I don't even think he beat Albon, to be honest. So that's my, I don't know.
I mean, for, you know, I said this last week whenever we last talked about this, I think Albon's a great pick for that seat for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned, Drew. I think it's, you know, I think it poses a challenge to George. It's not like a gimme seat where it's like, okay, you have another couple of years before like Alonso retires or bring in this young guy. Like, it's like, you have to show up next year. You have to perform because he is very much your equal in terms of like talent. He hasn't had the best cars, you know, in term comparatively, but I think he's got a lot to prove. I think he's really impressive. I think he'd be a great choice being with Williams, being in that James Vowles kind of environment, like a little mini Mercedes, like boot camp. And I think he fits, you know, if you talk about like the demeanor and the mold of a Mercedes driver, I think he very much fits that. I do have one other driver to ask you about. Similar situation maybe for next year. And that is, I want to get your thoughts on Checo. Going into 2025, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I heard that he has to secure a seat for the following year. He has to finish second in the driver standings. I don't know how true that is or not. I read that somewhere on some kind of rumor site. Regardless, is this Checo's final year in Formula One? And if it's not, what are the options for next year, given someone like Sainz is in a similar position?
I think Sainz has more longevity. I think Sainz, like, if you take the career paths, I think Checo has exhausted his options in terms of teams. I think he's had a shot with the best, didn't show up. And, you know, he's one of the few drivers on the grid with, like, a family and a future. And, like, you know, he's going to go to Mexico and do his thing. And, like, I think, you know, he might – I just think now would be a nice time to ride off into the sunset for Checo. Like, I think this will be a great final year. I know any driver would hate to hear something like that, but I think if you ask me to pick a driver for a car or a team for the next 5 years, if it was Checo or Sainz, I'd pick Sainz all day.
I agree with you, Drew. I don't see Checo in F1 either. You hit the nail on the head with this one. It's just he lost the drive, you know, after a season like last year. The pressure, the external factors just really got to him, and he was just, you know, he had a couple good races, but he was just not performing. And if you look at Sim, to your point, if you look at Sainz, there's so much more life in Sainz than there is to Checo in regards to a lot of factors. I agree. I think Checo is done if he secures a seat with Red Bull or any other team. I would be genuinely surprised. Obviously, happy to a point, but genuinely surprised because, you know, same thing with Valtteri Bottas. When you were with Mercedes at the best years, you know, where is better? There's no better. It's only worse. It's the same thing for Checo. You know, if he doesn't secure that Red Bull seat, that's it. All the other teams are essentially worse to some level. So, yeah, Ed.
I'd like to go against the grain on this one. That I think that Checo is going to drive the wheels off the car this year for Red Bull, but will not get the seat. It will get a seat in another team. Why? There's a bunch of drivers that's pretty much your contracts ending this year. There's a lot of drivers. So if Checo does show that he is going to be a number two driver or like a very competitive driver, top two, top three at the most, I think one of the bottom teams are going to snag him for probably a year just to see if he's going to help improve the teams. Namely, could be Williams, could be Stig Sauber. Who knows? Like maybe Sainz and Checo could be in one team. It could be Sauber. We'll never know. But I don't think it's the last. I don't think it's the last year for him. I think he has one or two more years.
Yeah. So I was just looking up. So Checo is 34. He has been in Formula One for 13 years. This will be his 14th season, which just seems mind blowing. I can't picture him being in the sport 14 years ago. To your point, I think it's just, I don't know where you go from here, right? It's not going to be Red Bull. It's not going to be like, is he going to pull like a Valtteri Bottas and go drive for a shit team, grow a mullet and call it a day? Like, I don't really know. It's, I feel like that might be his future, like have a cerveza and just like call it for the day, right? So I think, to your point, Drew, I think he's got family. He's made some good money. He'll go do some commentating or whatever in Mexico, have a nice life. And it's not like he hasn't performed. It's not like he hasn't had longevity in the sport. It's just, I don't know, can you be satisfied going from, you know, that top team similar to Bottas? I think a couple of years ago, this is a very similar scenario, right? And he went to Alpha, and how has that worked out for him? I think we can agree, at least from the outside looking in, you know, his social media and like his whole persona that he's developed for himself. It's like racing seems secondary, right? He loves tertiary, doing. Tertiary. It's like, mullets, triathlons, cycling, Formula One. You know what I mean?
He has a pizza truck too, like a food truck. Does he? He's got a pizza truck too. Yeah.
He's got a coffee company. He's got all this other stuff. Photo going shoots. On. And new photo shoots. Boy. So I don't know, right? I don't really know where we go from here, but we'll find out soon enough in about 10 months or so. Probably shorter than that. Probably August. It always seems like when they go on the break, that's when all the shit drops, right? So we'll find out in a few months where things go. I think it's only fitting that we end this episode the way we started with our local Latvian, Thomas, taking it home with the same zest and vigor you brought us into this episode.
Well, first of all, let me do a small correction. Not Latvian, Lithuanian.
You know what? I was saying different it.
Countries. You know what? The walk, you guys are all the same.
Yeah, I was saying it, and in my mind, I was like, apparently, that's not the right country, but I'm just going to roll the alliteration. And I knew I was wrong, but thank you for correcting me. So wherever you're from, take us home.
Get a Lithuanian send-off here.
This is a huge honor to do a goodbye, because this is first time doing it. So I don't know how to do it, but basically thank you to all the listeners for first time and hopefully not the last time. But thank you for all the listeners to tuning into this amazing fun podcast. Thank you for joining us. We will see you in a week from the same locations. Me from Lithuania, the boys from the GTA, and we will see what is going to happen in a week from today. Love you all. Thank you for tuning in. And have an amazing day, night, wherever, whenever you're listening to this. Talk to you soon. Peace out.
Rate, subscribe, like, share with your friends.
Yeah. Rate, subscribe, Discord. Follow us on YouTube, Discord, Instagram.
It needs a little work. It needs a little work.
Hopefully, I get to do this outro a couple more times, and I'll be good.
Ed, you want to do next week? Maybe we should all take turns.
I think so.
Yeah. Ed, right. You're up next week. You can prepare.
Yeah.
All right, I can
prepare. Have a whole week to prepare. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Okay, bye for now, all right,
boys. This has been fun. Ciao.
Peace.
Ciao. Welcome to Parc Fermé,
the Canadian Formula One podcast. We talk race reviews, news from the paddock, and bring you everything from the world of Formula One. And now your hosts, Drew, Walker, Ed, and Tomas.